Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com.
From Tsunami Sushi in downtown Lafayette, we're Out to Lunch with Christian Mader, editor and publisher of The Current. It's business, Acadiana style.
Welcome to Out to Lunch. I'm Christian Mader. Fitness is a big industry. Over the last decade, the global market for fitness has nearly doubled to around $100 billion. And you've probably seen the results of that around town. You can think about the 24/7 gyms and fitness centers that you see, smoothie shops, personal trainers, all that. And that world is expanding not just in size, but in variety, and it's drawing in ideas and disciplines from the world of the arts, too. There are fitness programs based on ballet and dance, and they can combine movement, performance, expression, and they're still a pretty good workout. And that would be one way to describe aerial arts, and you might be more familiar with how it's applied to gymnastics or the circus, maybe, high-flying trapeze acts or silk climbers. And you can get a taste of that high life with a little help from my guest, Rachel Adams, co-founder and co-owner of Skycraft, an aerial arts studio right here in Lafayette. Rachel started taking aerial arts classes herself in 2015 with Aaron Welch, who is now her business partner, and they co-founded Skycraft in 2022. The studio offers group and private instruction as well as aerial performance for hire, no pun intended. Rachel and Aaron often do pop-up performances at major events like Festival International or at nonprofit fundraisers. About 80% of the Skycraft students are kids, Rachel says, but interest among adults is steadily rising. Rachel Adams, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thank you.
Exercise might be good business, but the fundamentals of physical fitness are something most of us learn in school. And so you might want a career in physical education. Well, it's not really good enough anymore to just be the football coach. You've got to know what you're doing. My guest, Kaylin McKee, is someone who can help you with that. Kaylin is a senior instructor in UL Lafayette's School of Kinesiology and the program coordinator for K-12 health and physical education. In a nutshell, Kaylin's job is to teach teachers, and that job description is changing fast. Her program includes online instruction, which presents a challenge in and of itself. How do you teach someone to teach physical education from a Zoom room? A 21st century problem, if there ever was one. Kaylin grew up in Monroe and has lived in Lafayette since 2019. Kaylin McKee, welcome to Out to Lunch.
Thank you. I will say it's West Monroe. My father will get mad if I didn't correct you.
West
Monroe. But I appreciate you.
Yeah, cool.
I hear there's a distinction.
I'm always here for specificity. Yeah. So, Rachel.
Yes.
So I'm framing this around physical fitness, but it's called aerial arts, right?
Yeah.
So I am curious, like, do most people come into your door looking for the experiences, like, they want to learn an art form, or are people mostly coming to it saying, like, I want to get exercise?
It's a little bit of both. And like you said, we have a lot of kids that are students.
Yeah.
And so those parents of the kids are looking for something physical and active for the kids that isn't necessarily a competitive sport.
Yeah.
So they want their kids to be active, physical, but they also want them to be creative.
Yeah.
And that's where we come in.
So I noticed that, like, a lot of your certification, it does specifically have, like, the word circus in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so is the discipline here really rooted in that kind of performance? I mean, talk to me just a little bit more about, like, maybe the more conventional path, you know, that aerial artists might have taken 20 years ago versus what they do now.
Right. Well, 20 years ago, a studio like ours was not around.
Okay.
So you had to go to circus school
okay.
to learn aerial arts.
Yeah.
And now, nowadays, it's a lot more accessible to everybody.
Sure.
And that's part of what we're doing, is bringing it to a broader population where you don't have to be born into the circus
okay.
to learn how to swing on the trapeze.
Okay. That's interesting.
yeah.
So, Kaylin, I mean, speaking of access here, right, like, I kind of presented this, you know, rabbit hole, right? You're teaching teachers, in a lot of cases, you're teaching them in a remote setting. And so it kind of raised a thought for me, is like, are you also having to teach teachers in a remote setting to themselves become teachers of physical education in a remote setting?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes, especially with COVID, a lot of our classes are now back in person, but we still have a couple of courses that are online.
Yeah.
Just because our students also are expected to be in K-12 schools, which is from 8 to 3 typically.
Right.
So we still need course content, and we do that by teaching online.
But do you have to teach them to teach online? I guess I'm trying to get a sense of, like, you know, this would seem to be an emerging discipline and being a teacher regardless, right? And so, but it would specifically affect phys ed teachers too, right?
Yeah, so, and that's been a really big push, is a lot of different education is moving online in general. So how, if you're going to school or you're homeschooling your child in an online setting, how are you teaching them physical education? Are they supposed to just submit videos and you check off, oh, they jumped up for 20 minutes a day?
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily quality physical education, or is it comprehensive of all the skills? So that way they would have the skills to go and maybe into the community and participate in something like Silks.
Yeah, I mean, so I am sort of curious if my sense of what physical education was like when I was, you know, six, you know, was you kind of had a class and maybe they would teach you a line dance or something. And it was usually sort of felt like the person who was assigned in that school maybe wasn't trained to be a physical education teacher. They were just sort of voluntold to be one. So, I mean, like, talk to me just a little bit about how that's grown over time. I mean, is it like research that's driving the way that's changing, or is it expectations from parents? I mean, why is it changing so rapidly?
Yeah, so that would be like a whole series of, you know, conversations.
Sure,
but in general,
we've got time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I think in general, though, to go back, yes, what we all participated in physical education, the majority of us, probably it wasn't quality, nor was it what we're doing now. And what a lot of people don't realize outside of the field of education is that physical educators who are certified, they go through 4 years of college. They not only get all the teaching courses, but like in my situation, they also get all the kinesiology courses. So they're learning the lesson plan and teach, but they're also learning anatomy and biomechanics. And so they are knowledgeable, credentialed human beings, and they're not just somebody who's randomly thrown in a bit like a gym who should roll out a ball. There's a lot more that goes into quality physical education.
And how do you, with so much access to YouTube and Instagram, people just, you know, tooting themselves as fitness coaches on Instagram, do you feel like you're competing with that, or you're supplementing that in a really healthy way? Because we deal with that too, you know,
100%.
The YouTube videos and the Instagram.
Right. And it can go both ways. Mm-hmm. So there are some great opportunities like to build movement into classrooms, like content classrooms. And sometimes you can do that by throwing up a video. But the problem is a lot of administrators or people, again, not in the field of education, knowing what quality PE looks like, thinks that that YouTube video can replace that credentialed teacher with
the
degree.
It can't.
And it can't.
Yeah.
Especially because, in general, for PE K-12, our students should be participating in all the sport categories, all the skills, so that way they can lead a lifetime of physical activity. If I just play one sport my whole life, which sports specialization is a whole nother topic, I only have that one set of skills. So therefore, I can't go and just jump into a Silks class. But if I have learned body movement, body control, basic skills like throwing, kicking, all the things, dance, movement, then yeah, I can go in there and feel really confident. And a YouTube video or an online class cannot replace that at all. And so we fight that all the time in our field as well.
Rachel, I mean, you're talking about sort of competing with what sounds like low quality aerial instruction.
Yes.
I mean, define for me, as a person who doesn't know a lot about it, like, show me what that looks like. You know, what does bad education look like from your perspective? So that I know if I start, you know, going down a YouTube rabbit hole with some Silks, that I'm going to hurt myself.
Right. Yeah. So technique, body positioning, coordination, much of what you were talking about is the same for aerial arts. You know, you want to be able to physically correct people when they are arching their back versus rounding their back. Mm-hmm. And they might not realize the difference in the moment, which is why having a hands-on instructor is really important.
When you got into this as sort of a business proposition, I mean, were you thinking that you would mostly be working with kids? I mean, did you see sort of a market opportunity there? And you said, you know, parents are really interested in new things for their kids to do, and I was interested in this myself, and so they would like it? Or was it something more basic than that?
We knew we would have more kids as students than adults, mostly because my business partner, Erin, had been teaching kids in town for 6 or 7 years, and she had a roster of kids who were wanting to continue aerial arts when we opened.
So, I mean, was it this, I guess what I'm trying to tease out a little bit is like, how you knew there might be interest in something so specialized?
Well, it takes a while to build that interest, and she was doing that previously, building that interest. But there's so many kids who, like I said before, don't want to do a competitive sport. They don't fit in that environment, and they want to find something where they can still be a team player, but it's a more individualized experience.
And I kind of want to add to that. So the same thing, we're seeing a lot of specialization in sport, a lot of issues in the school districts, especially as our kids go from elementary to like middle school, high school. Elementary school, everybody gets PE, but by you get to middle school, high school, you can sub out PE, you play sports. And so people don't understand that there is a difference. So sport is very specialized. There's tryouts. Only certain people can make the team. Physical education should be for everyone. It is a
even
right.
If you're in a sport.
Correct. Even if you're in a sport, because it's a different skill set. It's a right for our students, not a privilege. And something that I really appreciate from y'all's website that I think is something that we share when it comes to physical education versus y'all is your whole statement about inclusivity. Mm-hmm. So regardless of who comes to PE, if you don't have skills, if you have disabilities or whatever, it's my job as a certified teacher to make sure that I'm including you, because you still have your own set of schools that I can help you practice, and I can give you that feedback that a video can't give you. And then you have basic skills so you can go in the community to do something like their program. And that's not substituting what I do, but what I'm doing is not a substitute for recreation and activity in your own time.
Yeah. Are most people, Kaylin, coming through your program, I mean, are they at the point where they know what they want to do is become a teacher? I mean, or is it the sort of thing where maybe I'm taking classes in the program and it's part of an overall curriculum because I want to be... You know, I want to one day open up a training center myself. I mean, talk to me about the profile of somebody that you tend to teach.
Right. So there's not just one type of person. We get kind of both sides. So we do have some students who come in and they know they're going to be a teacher. And in general, there's a national push right now. It's Educators Rising. UL has a teacher group for our students, basically. Mm-hmm. And we're trying to raise the prestige of what it means to be a teacher by recruiting middle school, high school students early. So more students come in wanting to be a teacher. But then I do have the opposite, and I have students who are a pre-professional major or fitness studies major, and they want to be a coach. Mm-hmm. And then they realize, oh, well, I don't want to take these sciencey classes. I want to take more hands-on, and I want to work with kids. So they then change their concentration to be PE majors.
Yeah.
So we kind of see both.
I mean, Rachel, did you, you know, is you, a big part of what you do, right, is teaching it? I mean,
yes.
Did you long have a desire to get into teaching and this was a pathway into it? Or was that just sort of an accessory of being interested in owning your own business and being particularly interested in aerial arts?
I have not a strong desire to be a teacher. teaching is hard.
Yeah.
I applaud the teachers.
Yeah.
I might. It's a tough thing to do, especially in a physical setting where you're constantly watching and correcting.
Yeah.
But I teach as part of owning the business.
Yeah.
And as being able to do aerial arts and share it with other people. And that's where I found the passion, is being able to share it.
Yeah. Talk to me a bit more about the performance side of this for you, because you guys get booked to do aerial arts, right?
Like
it's not just a studio, like it's a company in a different sense of the word. I mean, I don't know that people would necessarily assume, right, I'm going to be an aerial artist, I'm going to get paid to go and perform it for people. So talk to me a bit about the sort of the kind of gigs that you get.
Okay, so we've had some really fun gigs. We have done champagne pourings.
Okay.
So we will climb up in the silks or on the lira, and we'll pour champagne into people's glasses from the air.
Okay.
And they're wowed.
Yeah. How high above are you?
Just like about head height.
Okay.
Yeah. Are they like renting your facility for y'all to do it? Or y'all
take
y'all?
No, we travel.
Like,
yeah.
How do you like hang the stuff somewhere?
It has to be... It has to be a space that you can hang an aerial apparatus in, or that we bring our portable rig to. So we have a portable setup that we can hang from safely. And safety is a big concern, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have to just practice pouring champagne into glasses? I mean, like,
yes,
I feel like I
that's
just...
That's right. That's how I spend my Friday nights.
Okay.
Practicing pouring champagne
into
glasses.
I think that's just called drinking,
Rachel. And if you need a taste tester to hold it.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let me know.
But no, it does actually take a lot of practice.
We've
spilled plenty while practicing, but never really any big spills during a performance. That's great.
So, I mean, okay, so where does this idea come from? And is this sort of people generally expect, okay, I want to get, it's sort of like an ice luge, right? Like I want a different way to get my alcohol. Or was it something that you guys came up with yourselves?
It's something that's done around the country. Not that often here in town, but you know, we offer it as an option and not everyone takes us up on it. Some people just, they actually want a performance, which we do that as well.
You're listening to Out to Lunch. I'm Christian Mader. Talking to Rachel Adams of Skycraft and Kaylin McKee of the UL School of Kinesiology. Kaylin, I'm sort of curious if, like, the way we talk about physical education, right? I mean, you've made this, you know, important distinction between, say, sports education versus, you know, PE. I mean, has part of that been influenced by the fact that people have opportunities like this where like, people are getting older? They're you know, you can get into a discipline that for years you had to be born into to do it.
Right.
Or is it the opposite? Is it sort of like the idea that people within the academy, right, see an opportunity to train people to do that? I don't know if my question is making a lot of sense, but I guess I'm trying to understand, like, to what extent your what you're teaching has changed in response to what people are doing in the real world.
I think that's a great question. And I think when you look at the history of why our physical education programs were set up the way that they were, there was a lot set in, like, military. It was for military training to make sure we got fit during the wars. And then we followed other countries, and then we went into sport training. But then again, the biggest thing is, like, sport is great. I grew up playing lots of sports, but sport, none of our students play. So how do we meet the needs of all of our students? Because when you look at the goal of physical education, it is to teach students the skills, the knowledge, and the dispositions or attitude to want to be active for a lifetime. So if I'm only teaching you basketball or football, when was the last time you went and played a pickup football game? Probably not recently. What's more accessible? Picking up and playing pickleball with somebody. So yeah, like, pickleball's hot right now. We're gonna teach pickleball. Oh, my local, I would love to, if I taught in a high school, I would take them biking. We'd go to the nature center. We teach kayaking. That's an outdoor activity. Go to the local climbing or silks facility. So some of that, guys, what we could be teaching in certain schools, that's dictated by what you have locally. But like, what can we teach so our students want to be active? Because the research is showing that as a society, we are not active. And why? We're leaving them out because we're only teaching certain sports that we're not interested in or playing. Or once they get to high school, they opt out. They're doing other activities. And when they do have PE, it's a roll out the ball situation, or you get your grade because you put on the right t-shirt and shorts. Like, that's not going to improve physical activity. So why is that the focus?
Yeah, it's very interesting because you're right. As a society, we are not very active. And I think what you said, it's because people are not interested in being active in the ways that that traditionally we've taught them.
Right.
But kayaking is a great way to stay active. And if you love nature, that's a natural tie-in.
Yeah, and if you've ever had to put a kayak on a car, like, that's 30 minutes of cardio.
Exactly,
so good,
there you go.
You know?
And that's actually why I got into aerial arts, is because I hated going to the gym. Like, I wanted to be active, but I wasn't getting anywhere. I wasn't, like, feeling fulfilled by going and running on a treadmill or doing the elliptical thing. And I didn't know how to lift weights. Like, I wasn't taught that in school. And I couldn't find anything at the gym by myself that I felt good about, that I felt like I was doing correctly, that I liked. And when I found aerial arts, I started building strength. I got really flexible, things I had never seen in my body before.
Did you just happen upon it? I mean, it doesn't seem like the thing that was, like, it seems like you got the only studio I'm aware of in town. I mean, like, is it that you went to a party and somebody dropped a champagne bottle on your head? How did you do it?
That would be hilarious. Yeah. I did go to a party. I did go to a party in Austin, and I met an aerial performer in Austin, and she was like, come see my dress rehearsal. And I went and watched. It was my sister's friend, and it was the most beautiful thing I'd ever seen. It's like, oh my God, I want to do that. And I talked to her afterwards, like, how do I do that? She's like, oh, just find a class. It's like, oh, well, I live in Lafayette. I don't think we have that. And then a month later, we had it. Aaron was teaching at the ballet studio. I just ran into somebody who happened to mention it, and I started taking classes. And I fell in love.
So, I mean, when you get into this as a discipline, I mean, you know, there are these different apparatuses that you describe, right? Like, whether it's the silks or the trapeze. I mean, do people tend to learn all of them, or do people tend to, like, I'm going to stick with trapeze. It's kind of my jam. Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So the way that we have structured our classes is that you start by getting a taste of all of them. So if you take an intro to aerial arts series, you will learn a little bit on trapeze, a little bit on lyra, a little bit on silks, a little bit on hammock. And then after that, you can choose to specialize in one or more things.
I think you might need to define a little more clearly what we're talking. So lyra, mm-hmm. what is lyra?
Lyra is the big hoop in the sky.
Okay.
Looks like a hula hoop hanging from the sky, but it's metal. It's
and
steel.
Then hammock, I'm thinking of something I sleep on. I'm assuming that's not...
So there's two types of silks. There's split silks, okay. And there's a hammock silk. So they're just hung opposite directions.
Okay.
So hammock is a big loop at the bottom, and split silks is two tails coming down.
Yeah. I mean, Kaylin, I'm kind of, this has me curious if, like, you've talked a bit about, you really have to be a generalist in some level, right, to give kids a broad sense of what's available to them. And if you have, like, concepts like aerial arts that gain any traction or popularity, I mean, does that mean, like, if I want to be a physical education teacher, I need to know how to do 30 different types of physical education?
To a certain extent. So the way that we've built our program, All of our classes primarily, they lesson plan, but they teach different curricular models because a curriculum model is just a type of way to structure a lesson.
Right.
And we teach a lot of different kinds because not all students are the same. So if we only taught one way, we would be missing out on teaching all of our students.
Yeah.
But then every class uses different game categories and also different sports. So for instance, the class I'm teaching this semester, my students, we started with rugby. We then moved into Ultimate Frisbee, then we're going to softball and to cricket. And then in the other class that's taught this semester, they're doing lifetime activities like geocaching, letterboxing. They're currently doing like tailgating type games. They do rock climbing, potentially. I've done golf in there before. But yeah, they get introduced and they sample and they have to test off certain skills because as a teacher, I can't just tell you, hey, go do this. I need to be able to show you.
Yeah.
So they don't have to be experts, but they at least need to know the skill cues and be able to demonstrate the basics to a kindergartner versus a high school student.
I mean, how
that's so cool.
Popular does a sport or activity need to be before you guys would be like, well, we got to do this. You know, kids are really into geocaching now, so that's a lifetime sport.
I mean, right. Like, well, we have certain things that we will incorporate that we think are important, but one great thing about our program is our teachers or our students, we call them residents, they peer teach to each other.
Uh-huh.
So if they have an interest in something, like I never would have taught golf. I taught golf when I was a grad student, but I would have never incorporated that. But I had a student one year, he was a great golfer, and he was like, golf is a lifetime activity. Can I teach a lesson on it? Absolutely, you can. So he left. So then I pulled it in because I was like, that's a great. So yeah, we do adjust it. But I think it goes back to what you were saying about exposure. If as a teacher, I'm only teaching the same three things over and over again, I'm not exposing my students to options because my goal is they may not like everything, mm-hmm. but if I can find them and teach them one thing that they do like, they're going to choose to do that on their own. I'm going to set them up with resources in the community, and then now I've made a lifeline learner and a lifelong like active participant, mm-hmm. which is the goal.
And you don't know if you'll like it until you try it.
Correct. And so like, when I taught
K-12,
I would make deals with my students, like fill out the survey, and it was like, what do you like to do? What are some activities? What are sports you played? Whatever. And then the activity that the majority of my students did, I taught that as a first unit. And I basically bartered with them. I was like, I'm going to teach stuff that y'all like, but every other unit, you're then going to participate in things that I like. Mm-hmm. They had never been introduced to rugby, but I taught it to 80 middle school students. And by the end, the majority of them loved it. And it was just so different because they had to think in a different way to learn the rules. And so, yeah, like they gave me, I gave them what they wanted, and then they were respectful and then tried something new.
That's so cool. And those skills that they learned in rugby can probably transfer to other sports.
Right. So game categories, that's literally what it is. It's not the skills necessarily, but do the strategies of the game.
Yeah.
So you understand how to play soccer. In theory, you then understand how to play basketball mm-hmm. because they're both invasion games. The skills are different, but you're invading someone else's space to score.
Mm-hmm.
Another, like tennis, is very similar to like pickleball. You might not have a great serve, but if you understand how to play pickleball, you understand in theory how to play tennis. Mm-hmm. The rules
That's
might
very
be slightly
similar
different, but
to what we do in aerial arts, if you can learn certain skills on trapeze, they translate perfectly to sling to hammock,
right.
And you know, lira to hammock, mm-hmm. and silks to trapeze. They're all mixed in together.
Yep.
You can learn a set of skills on almost all of those together. Yep.
So
really
we call
cool.
it skill transfer.
Yeah.
Would be playing disc golf or playing ultimate frisbee is the same as playing, you know, whatever. It's the same skill. Or then strategy or tactic transfer, which would be creating open space in basketball is the same as creating open space in soccer.
That's
so very
so cool.
similar. Yeah.
Rachel, I mean, as you've kind of gotten this business underway and you've tried to market it maybe to other people, right? I mean, you said that, you know, you kind of detailed out a bit how parents might bring this, like how this mm-hmm. kind of makes sense that that a parent might bring their kid into this. But I mean, have you thought about whether, like, if you wanted to grow your adult business, that you need to talk about it any differently? And again, kind of going back to that distinction between it being sort of something a person might do because they want to do something like you did and see, like, oh, this is beautiful, I want to be a part of this mm-hmm. performance art, as opposed to somebody's like, man, I just don't resonate with the gym, but I'm looking for an interesting way to exercise. I mean,
yeah.
Do you feel like you have to emphasize one or the other to reach a new customer?
Yes, definitely. And we do have a circus fitness class that is just fitness.
Yeah.
So it is working out with the circus equipment. And that would be more for that customer who's like, I don't really care about the perform. I'm not going to perform. I don't care that it's beautiful. I know that those athletes who do that are strong and I want to be strong. Mm. So that would be one approach. And one challenge that we've had with getting our adult program to a higher level is that people think that they have to have these certain criteria met before they can start, which is not the case. Mm. And so when you asked about talking about things differently, that was the first thing that came to mind is like, yes, we do need to talk about the idea that anyone can do this. Anyone can start from anywhere and jump in and we'll teach you.
Yeah. I mean, I think a theme here, right, is, I mean, making things accessible or inclusive,
yes.
right? It's not just sort of a philosophy. It's pretty good business strategy. I mean, the bigger the pie of your customer base, the better it'll be for your business, whatever you're choosing to do. So thank you guys for sharing your stories with us here on Out to Lunch Acadiana.
Yeah, thanks for
You're
having
welcome.
Us.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
My guests on Out to Lunch Acadiana today have been Rachel Adams, co-owner and instructor at Skycraft, and UL senior instructor in kinesiology, Kaylin McKee. We edited this conversation to fit into our time slot here on KRVS, and you can hear our unedited conversation. Find out more about Rachel and Kaylin by listening to the Out to Lunch Acadiana podcast. You can find and subscribe on your podcast app and on our website, itsacadiana.com. If you want to know what we all look like, you can find photos from the show on itsacadiana.com and on our Out to Lunch Acadiana social media. These photos were taken by Aster Morgan. And you can find more of Aster's photos at astermorgan.com. Out to Lunch Acadiana is a production of INO Broadcasting for itsacadiana.com and KRVS 88.7 FM. The producer of our show is Grant Morris. Our technical producer is Eric Merle. Our associate producer is Chad Terrio. Our researcher is Leah Erdialis. And today's show was engineered by Dylan Babineau. I'm Christian Mader, editor of The Current, Lafayette's nonprofit newsroom. And to get the scoop on Lafayette, head over to thecurrentla.com and sign up for our free newsletters. We'll see you here next time for more business and conversation on Out to Lunch Acadiana. Bye-bye.
Out to Lunch Acadiana was recorded live over lunch at Tsunami Sushi on Jefferson Street in downtown Lafayette. Tsunami is open Tuesday through Saturday for lunch and dinner, serving sushi, sashimi, salads, and authentic Japanese grilled dishes. Tsunami welcomes casual dining or reservations. More information at servingsushi.com. Major support for Out to Lunch is provided by the law firm of Jones Walker, established in 1937 with over 375 attorneys in offices throughout the U.S., providing a comprehensive range of services to a local, national, and international client base. JonesWalker.com. Mitchell Foreman wrote and performs all the music on Out to Lunch. You can hear Mitchell's music anywhere great jazz is sold or streamed, and at MitchellForeman.com. If you'd like to be part of Out to Lunch, to learn how your business or organization can become an Out to Lunch program partner, email info@inobroadcasting.com.